welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Penny Sansevieri. Welcome, Penny.
Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, no, it's great to have you. So just a bit of an introduction. Penny is the author of 10 books, a professional speaker and book publicist at Author Marketing Experts. She has just rewritten and re-released Red Hot Internet Publicity, an insider's guide to promoting your book on the internet. Now, I first read that book years ago now. Goodness me. Must be 6 years, would it be? The first one?
Yeah. It's been about 6 years when the first one came out.
Yeah, and reading that book was part of what started me on this journey. So,
That's great. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So what's so funny now is, of course, when I first read that book, all of the words you used, you know, there's a whole language around the internet, isn't there? And the words you used back then, I remember almost every second word, I didn't understand what it meant. And now reading it again, I'm like, oh my goodness, that's how I speak now.
Yeah. And it's completely changed, right? So the first edition of this book is almost unrecognizable from the one that I just released.
Mm. Yeah. So that's just before we jump into that, to just give us a little bit more history about you and your career in this industry.
Well, I've been in business for 13 years. And I started with serving the independently published and self-published authors, because 13 years ago, they were still the little stepchildren that weren't quite invited to the party, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody really wanted anything to do with self-publishing. And you know this because you've been in this industry for a long time. It's taken a while to kind of get here, but I felt like there was a real need for somebody to kind of serve that market. And so that was my focus, the classes I taught, the books I wrote, that was where. And now self-publishing is sort of very in. It's the new black. You know, everybody wants to self-publish. Even traditionally published authors want to self-publish. So, and the internet happened because I realized that because of self-publishing, I mean, not only is the internet a great vehicle for getting books out, but because of self-publishing, you know, the good news is everybody can publish a book. The bad news is everybody can publish a book. So it clogs everything, television, interview, radio, print. Mm-hmm. And I felt like in order to kind of level the playing field for our authors, we needed to start digging in online. And when we started, this is going to really date me, but there was no Facebook. I mean, maybe they were somewhere off sort of developing that in college, but this is pre-Twitter. The only thing we had to work with were blogs, but you know, it was a pretty good gamble, because obviously now everybody's online.
Mm.
But that was kind of sort of the trajectory of that.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So let's get back to the book then. So you said so much has changed, you know, since that first edition. So what are some of those things that have dramatically changed for authors and marketing?
Well, I think that people, you know, when I wrote, so I wrote about Twitter in one of the editions, okay? And everybody thought that Twitter was a fad. Now, you know, my dog has a hashtag. Well, not really. but you know what I mean? So
yeah.
These things have become ingrained in our culture. You know, if you're watching the Oscars, you're probably following the hashtag on your phone on Twitter. You know, it's become sort of part of our culture. That's those types of things, the way that some of the social media has become very ingrained into our culture and actually has what can turn the tide on, you know, a news story or trends or things like that has been phenomenal, very unexpected.
Mm.
I also remember, and I think that you and I chatted about this, when I wrote the book, Second Life, which was sort of this creepy kind of alternate universe. But it was really, there were books on Second Life, and it was really going to take off and everything. I'm kind of glad it didn't.
Yeah,
it's very strange. you know, it's sort of like, wow, so you have, I mean, there were people that had, like, jobs and families.
Yeah, and houses.
And, yeah, it was kind of, it's like, wow.
Maybe
huh,
they still do. Maybe they're still doing it.
Well, they are still doing it, but it's become sort of, like, less of it. You know, it's become less of a trend. So, you know, certain things come and certain things go. But what has not changed is the fact that the things that really move the needle on social media is the consumer.
Mm.
The consumer is really, really driving that. I mean, it would be nice to say that, you know, I get that Facebook and when IPO and all this other, but the money that's behind these sites is behind it because consumers are driving the momentum there.
Mm. And I think, you know, probably the big change with social is that normal people are on social, like you're saying, the consumer is. So when authors think, oh, I must do social, that they need to think in terms of incorporating it into their life and not just as a, not just like a press release is or used to be where you put one out everywhere, however many months, right? Social needs to be in the fabric.
Yeah, it has become, you know, it's sort of like getting up in the morning and brushing your hair and checking your Twitter feed. And it's become very much part of our culture. And it has affected even people who, you know, you wouldn't expect to be and in a personal sense, right? So on Facebook, oh, I'm going to check and see how the family camping trip is going and, you know, see the pictures and that kind of thing. So it's become a communication vehicle for sharing that information and to a wider audience. And it's become a way to disseminate information to your, you know, to your consumer. And people say, well, I want to go online and I want to go viral. I want this to go viral. But you know, the reality, Joanna, and you know this too, is that very few things really go viral.
Yeah.
Right. If it's a puppy dog or if it's a kitty or if it's something, right, or if it's this cute little baby and a puppy dog, even better. And it's not to say that books and videos, things like that can't go viral, but the first thing that consumers need to really look at or that an author needs to look at is engage that consumer in a way that, you know, they now become ingrained in their daily activities when they hop on Facebook or they hop on Twitter or something like that.
Mm, no, absolutely. And just thinking about what else has changed, I mean, Google search, I mean, content marketing, what, you know, I guess we used to call blogging and e-zines and stuff, we now kind of call content marketing. And I mean, I'm sure you know, but maybe if you can explain to people listening, Google's Panda and Penguin updates have kind of changed what matters in terms of search. So maybe you could talk a bit about how that's changed and how Google search now ranks content.
Well, and that's a great question because Google, so effectively, Google's becoming a person, which is a little frightening because Google basically, you know, runs the world, right? Google is our, like 89% of us default to Google as our search engine, right? Google Plus, which we can also chat about. And I know you're very active on Google Plus, which is fantastic. You know, YouTube, Gmail, I mean, those, all those properties. But what Google said, because 5 years ago, you used to be able to get into Google and actually trick the system.
Mm.
And by trick the system, I mean that you could put up dummy sites under keywords, right? So you could get, for example, a site called vacuum.com. And anytime somebody went online to look for a vacuum, you would rank number one.
Mm.
And you could, and you'd say, well, what's really the purpose of that unless you're selling vacuums? What they did is they sold AdWords. They sold Google AdWords to sites like Hoover and Eureka and things like that. And that's how they made their money. And there were people that were making, they're called sort of black hat marketers that were making, I mean, millions of dollars doing this, quite frankly. So part of that caused Google to step in and say, you're not going to skew search results. We're going to become more sophisticated about that. So what Google did back in, I think it was 2011, is they did the Penguin update, which was the first update, and it literally wiped out a lot of sites. Mm. So as an example, a lot of authors were using Article City and eZine articles, right? Mm. Those sites lost huge rank. They would go from page one to page 5,000, right? And it, part of it is because there was they were considered content generator sites, which we don't even recommend those article sites anymore.
Yeah.
And then Google said, okay, now we've done that. Now here's what's going to happen. You have to have really good content on your site. If you want to put a site up and you want to get ranking, you'd better be putting good content on there. So things like consistent content, helpful information, right? Getting away from what some people did called keyword stuffing, which is where they would find some of their keywords and they would just, and it would be nonsensical junk, right? But they would get great ranking with the Google said no more. And you know, so consistent, and then also watching out for repetitive content. So there were marketers using one article, putting it in seven different places. So Google basically said, you are not going to trick the system anymore. And the only people who don't like these changes are people who are trying to trick the system.
Yes.
But what it has done, it has really leveled the playing fields. But it does require that you do more and consistent work, right?
Yes.
So, like, I'll talk to authors who will say, you know what, I put up five blog posts. I'm now going to wait for the people just start coming to me. And, Joanna, you know, because you blog even more than we do, right? You know that you have to continually, the first month or 2 months maybe that you put a blog out, I don't know, did you see any,
nobody comes. It's going to be
a year,
I reckon.
Yeah, you know, it was the same for us too. Mm. So we actually had, you know, I think it was a year before anybody even commented on our blog, right? So Google says now you need to be consistent and you need to be helpful. And the only thing, and that is so benefiting everything online. And so I'm really glad they're doing it. I'm not, you know, I wish we had more options when it came to search engines, but you know, it kind of is what it is. But, and then, you know, what they're also doing is if you are, the more active you are on Google Plus, the more active you are on all of the Google properties, the better your search rank is going to be too. So, because they do, you know, obviously they do dominate that, but content has become just an enormous piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. And then we'll come back to Google Plus, but why I wanted to talk about that is what I find with authors is, let's face it, a lot of authors are not that tech savvy and are not that interested in being tech savvy. So often when authors find out they have to do this stuff, they end up with people who are scamming them and they want to do this, the age-old SEO optimization, which basically I don't think works anymore, as you've just said. It's more about content. But how can, and I think non-fiction in particular can, you know, non-fiction books can sell very well through content marketing. How would a non-fiction author use content to attract people?
Well, I think that the first piece of this is that you have to figure out what your consumer wants. So I recommend follow other blogs, see what other of the top experts are talking about, follow news trends. Google Alerts is going away, so using sites like mention.net or talkwalker.com can really help you to keep track of things that are going on in the industry. And then those are the things that will start to spark ideas. And that's where you really want to lead with this. So figure out what your consumer wants, follow other experts, get to know the other experts, right? And as you follow them, it'll start to spark ideas. And you're like, oh, wait, that's a great idea. I could be also reviewing books, or like you're doing right now, you're interviewing somebody else in the industry, right? Mm. I could be interviewing people. I could be reviewing books. I don't always have to be writing my own content. So the content doesn't always have to be you talking about things. If you can do that all the time, that's great. And God love you. I can't, right? So when we do, you know, we have our YouTube channel. So I'll put a video together, put it on the YouTube channel, put it on the blog. Whenever I go to an event, I pull the best hashtags from the event. I put those together for a blog idea. You don't even have to go to an event to do this. You could follow a particular hashtag for a week and say, these are the best. And don't just list them, you know, sort of give
them.
Right, exactly. Kind of have a conversation around them. But that's the first piece of it, is once you figure out what you're going to write about, and then, you know, create a calendar, right? So maybe Friday is your video day, or once a month you put up a video, and then you do hashtags, so that you're not having to sit in the morning and stare at a computer and go, oh God, what am I going to write about? But consistency. We used to say you should blog once a week. You really got to blog two or three times a week, sadly, because so many people are conversing out there about your same topics. You want to make sure and remain relevant. Also, your blogs don't have to be long. Mm. Don't think about writing blogs that are, 1,200 words every single time. I've had blogs sometimes that are 500 words, and they work as well, if not better, because people's attention spans are shrinking. So I'm less likely to read a blog that is really, really long, as opposed to something that just, sort of gives me the information I need and moves on.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned there you do videos. I mean, do you feel, someone who knows this industry and things, does multimedia help you stand out more than a text blog? Because some of my videos rank on page one of Google for things because there are so few videos compared to text.
Yeah. Video is phenomenal. So video, pictures on all your blogs. Okay. Every blog should have some kind of an image. Video is very important. Multimedia. In fact, I just put up a video on our YouTube channel about how to get more Twitter followers. And one of the top ways to do that is to use media. Mm. And what I recommend that you do is, utilizing, if you have pictures that you've taken at an event or something like that, put them into Instagram. Right. Put them up on your blog, maybe share them on Facebook, whatever. Using your video, embed your video in your blog post, make sure that you have a YouTube channel, that kind of thing. Part of the reason for that multimedia integration is also because of something called clout. Mm. And clout is very quickly becoming an important scoring system. It's a little scary. It's like that whole Second Life thing. It's a little scary. But clout, and some are calling clout actually the social security number of your, social media, where you get to see sort of your importance based on your number. Now, it's not based on how many followers you have. It's based how interactive you are with these various sites and how interactive your followers are to you. So the more that you can incorporate the use of all of these into what you're doing, and once you have an Instagram account, once you have a YouTube account, it's just a matter of uploading, poof, and then it's on the blog, and it's easy. The initial setup, of course, takes a little bit more time.
Yeah, and I know there's people listening now just going, oh my goodness, look at all this new stuff. And I mean, and personally, I know of clout, and that is clout with a K, people watching and listening, but I haven't even looked at it. But I think some of these things, if you consistently put out good stuff, you don't need to pay that much attention to all the metrics, because they happen naturally if you're doing good stuff for people. That's kind of my rule.
Absolutely. And you know what? For those of you who are watching this or listening to this and getting overwhelmed, master one thing at a time. Mm. If this conversation is sending you into a tailspin going, oh my God, and I have to learn this, I have to learn that, master one thing at a time. Mm. Master your blog first. Mm. When you've mastered your blog, move on to YouTube. When you've mastered YouTube, move on to something else. Don't try and be the master of all, because it'll end up sort of backfiring on you. So master one thing and then move on. And then you find that once you do, it really, people say, social media people love to say, well, it only takes me a few minutes and blah, blah. Initially, it didn't take me a few minutes. I looked at YouTube and I was just like, oh God, now I have to do this and upload that and then keywords and whatnot. But now I've spent some time on it. Once you master the learning curve, it's fine. So
no, I agree. And there's a bit like there's a process flow similar to the self-publishing process flow. Once you've done it a couple of times, it just becomes much easier. Like, we'll do this interview, I'll turn it into a video, turn it into an audio, turn it into a blog post, tweet it, G+ it. Or there's like an order, and it doesn't take that long once it's all set up.
Right.
So it just takes time. So I wanted to ask you about, let's talk about Google Plus, because again, people will freak out, but essentially, what I found, I don't know about you, but I think I've just overtaken on Google Plus, I've overtaken the number of circles I'm in, let's say like friends or followers, same equivalent. It's overtaken Facebook. Within about 6 months, when I've been on Facebook for 4 years or something. So what do you see as the importance of Google Plus, and any kind of tips for using it?
Well, The importance of Google Plus is that without it, it's going to be hard to get ranking on Google. So Google Plus is really, I mean, it's really a must. And I recommend, if you don't really have a ton of time for it, one update a day.
Yeah.
So, and you know, a lot of times we'll, and you know this too, because you follow us, a lot of times what we'll do is we'll link out to other content, right?
All the time. Yeah, I do the same.
Yeah. So 70 to 80% of what I do is I link out to content, you know, I'll repost something you did or something, some of the other industry people did, you know, that kind of thing. But it is very helpful for getting ranking. And everybody, if you have a Gmail account, you have a Google Plus account, you just haven't claimed it. It's actually a little easier, I think, to master than actually than Facebook.
Yeah, too. And it's getting better all the time. They keep redesigning it, don't they? And you know,
they do. It just went through a redesign, and it looks fantastic.
Any tips for using it? I mean, I haven't really gone into Hangouts yet. I mean, I haven't really used some of their other features. Do you think that's going to make a difference?
The Hangouts is a great feature. I started using that about a year and a half ago, and I stopped because it was a little bit glitchy. Now it's gotten considerably better.
Mm.
On Google Plus, you can use hashtags. Now, hashtags is not something we've talked about, but I recommend that you use hashtags in everything. Obviously, it started on Twitter because it's a great way to track conversation. But I use hashtags on Facebook, and I use them on Google Plus. So. But here's the interesting thing about Google Plus. People actually read more in the post than they do on Facebook. So, you know, on Facebook, people are just scanning and scanning and scanning. On Google Plus, you can actually have longer posts. In fact, one of the Google Plus experts that I was talking to said, you know, you could actually just plop an entire blog post into Google Plus and people will read it there. So you can have longer posts. You know, obviously using keywords, we have the same conversation around Facebook and, you know, and YouTube. Post a minimum of once a day. Make sure that you have a good bio in the back of the, at the back end of your bio. So when you're in, you know, when you're setting up your Google Plus, you can link to all your other accounts. And I really recommend that you do this because it'll help to, what it does is it helps to bring in, all of your other social media. The other thing that you can do, and I have a video on this, Joanna, so it may be a little bit too technical to go into on the call, but the other thing that you can and you should do is grab your authorship on Google Plus.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically what authorship is it's Google has devised a way to connect you with what you've written out there. And by setting up your authorship, basically it says, okay, these blog posts belong to me and they connect to you. What it also does is if you've ever searched online and you see a picture by a particular item, you're more likely to click on the item with the picture, so it'll also incorporate your picture in with that authorship too.
It's really important. I'll link to your video, and I mean it's something really important that very few people have actually sorted out at the moment. And I think it will become more important.
Well, because when they first rolled it out, I mean, you know, Google is fantastic, but they don't always roll everything. I mean, when Google Plus first launched, frankly, it was kind of a train wreck. You know, with all due respect to the developers, but it wasn't great. It's gotten really good since, but it really wasn't great. Authorship was kind of the same way. When that first launched, it was very confusing. Even some of the SEO people that I work with, they said, you know, stay away from it right now. And then about 6 months ago, it changed, and it's very easy to do, but you have to have a Google Plus account to be able to set it up.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I just want to, you know, stop because people are going, yes, but all of this stuff, how does this actually sell any books? So, I mean, you know, and I've been thinking a lot about this recently, which is the difference between marketing and sales. Because they are different. So when you're advising authors, you know, how do you talk about the difference between marketing and sales and all of this kind of, all of the social and the blogging and the authority you can build up online? How does that actually relate to book sales?
Well, the first thing that you need when you're looking to sell a book is you need visibility. You have to get out in front of your audience. And one of the worst things that an author can do when they start their campaign is say, how many books will I sell if I get on G Plus? Or how many books? And you know, if I got on your show and I said, I'm telling you, you'll sell 5,000 books the first day, that you're on G+, you can bet that everybody watching this who is an author is going to spend the time focusing on G+.
Yeah, I wish
there was a magic bullet like that. Sadly, there isn't. You have to have exposure in markets where your audience is, okay? So first is figure out where your market is, okay? If you are in a business market, you may have people on LinkedIn. If you are in, you know, like fiction, memoir, sorry, fiction, memoir, that kind of thing, your audience is probably going to be very active on Facebook, right? Visual markets, obviously YouTube tends to kind of cross over. So you have to figure out where your market is. You have to figure out the conversation and then you have to communicate with them. And I know that sounds like a very sort of, you know, long-winded kind of approach to selling books, but I'll tell you, that's how you get your visibility. And the second part of that is that you have to communicate with your reader.
Yeah.
And authors, you know, one of the things that we recommend to authors, and I've actually tested this on books, is you go in to the back of the book and you encourage readers to communicate with you. So, you know, last page of the book, thanks so much for reading this. You know, I'd love a review if you want, you know, if you didn't like the book, whatever, I'd love a review. Explain how reviews help you in your marketing, right? Readers, sometimes they don't really know, right? They think, oh, well, there's a publisher and the publisher will get them 100,000 reviews. And we all know that just doesn't happen, right? Ask them to communicate with you. Communicate back with them. Getting onto sites like Goodreads, or even if you just want to stay on Facebook or whatever. So you have to really create a partnership with your reader in order to be able to build the audience. And sure, good, you know, do reviews sell books? Well, the visibility that comes with getting those reviews helps to sell books, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's really where, you know, that's, and when, what I, and I'll tell you something, we have an author who is, and he hired us to do his marketing. He is like, I met him in Colorado. I can't go anywhere with him without him spending an extra 30 minutes trying to sell somebody his book. He is always, and he's not offensive about it. He's not like, oh, here, please buy my book. He's just, he's always on. And this guy has sold probably 10 times more books than I think the average self-published author would have in that same period of time. But that's because he's always, he knows, he's always after it. He knows he has to be active. He has a day job. He doesn't spend, you know, 10 hours a day doing this, but he's doing the right things to his reader.
Yeah.
And it took him a while to find that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I think, and I think people listening, I mean, I think it's very hard at the beginning because, you know, I certainly agree that the more books you have, the easier it is to sell books. You know, certainly for fiction, it's a lot about having a lot of books out there. But at the beginning, if you have one book or if you have one book in a nonfiction niche, for example, you have to do that. You have to build up that discoverability and almost hand sell, you know, that first 1,000 books or whatever. I mean, I felt that, and it gets easier over time. Everything gets easier over time, but you have to put in that time up front to get a big enough, you know, boost at the beginning, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's
it does.
Hard.
It is. It, you know, it isn't easy. But here's the other thing, too. So I talked to an author, romance author, right? I almost guarantee you've never heard of her, right? She could care less if anybody's ever heard of her. She writes a book a month. Now, they're short books. So they're 80, 90 pages, right? She writes a book a month. She's selling 12,000 ebooks a month at 70% royalty, and they're like $2.99 on Amazon, right? Now, and she doesn't have really great covers, and she knows this because I told her. I'm like, ooh, honey, you need to change your covers. And I just checked her last week, and she redid all her covers. I said, oh, that's awesome. But she's selling 12,000 copies of her book, and I had a conversation with her, and I said, why do you think that is? She says, because the romance market wants content.
Yes.
And I'm giving them content, and I'm writing, and they're serial romances. They're structured in a way that, you know, the guy hates girl, they get together,
and
then they write. So it's a standard thing. So she's following a formula. That's all she's doing is she's following a formula. And that's with genre fiction. what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of content over, you know, and I'm not saying necessarily one a month, because candidly, when I talk to her, seriously, I emailed Paula, yeah, who works for me, and I said, I'm quitting my day job.
Yeah. I'm being a romance.
Right, at one a month. But, you know, realistically, I mean, I don't know that I'm that imaginative, candidly. So, but you know, if you can write 4 books a year, I think that's really good. I mean, that's really good for a lot of people. But genre fiction, they really want, you know, the readers eat those books up. So it's also just kind of about knowing what your market wants.
Yeah, and you know? That's still content. That's the point. It's still content. It's still talking to your readers. Now, I could talk to you forever, Penny. We really, you know, there's so many things we could talk about. But we are running out of time. And I do want to ask you, because one of the questions I get every day, now people come to my site and they listen to the show or whatever, and then they go, oh my goodness, I can't do that for myself, or I don't want to do it for myself. And that's fair enough. You know, I think I started doing this because I had to. And then I learnt and I love it. I really enjoy it. So I'm someone who enjoys doing it myself. Now, can you tell us a bit about your company, Author Marketing Expert? And what do you do for authors? And then also, what do you recommend people try and do themselves, or what's, you know, best done with help?
Well, we do, and thank you for asking, by the way. We're a full service marketing company. And by full service, I mean we can do everything from internet, setting up your Facebook page, setting up your Twitter account, running those accounts for you, you know, blogging, getting reviews, everything to radio, TV, and print as well. So, but what we do depends on the author, what their goals are, what their, you know, what their budget is, the genre of the book, those kinds of things. So I talk to everybody that comes through the door just to kind of get a sense of where they need to be. As far as what, and we've been doing, I got to tell you, ebooks, for those authors who are listening who don't have their book in ebook yet, every time we have a print and an ebook and we're marketing them simultaneously, I'll tell you, the ebooks just do.
Everybody should have an ebook who's listening to this podcast.
Everybody should have an ebook. And it's much easier. You know, people, there's so much complicated information out there. It's really not hard to convert your, you know, to convert your book. In fact, I think you've done posts on it too.
Yeah, lots. Yeah.
But what an author should have, first off, every author should have a website. Mm-hmm. I want y'all to have a website. Absolutely. And you should be blogging on your own. Right? You should be on your site. You should be blogging. Maybe start, you know, a Facebook page, or go onto Goodreads, start an account there, or Library Thing if you'd rather go to Library Thing. You don't have to do all of it. You don't have to be on both and then here and then there, right? Pick something, like I said, that you can stay consistent with. Start that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just get comfortable with that. Because even if you hire a marketing company, you should still be doing some stuff on your own. Mm. What should you outsource? It really kind of depends. What do you think that you really can't do? I mean, look, books have a particular shelf life, right? So if you noodle with something for a year and then decide, oh, I really wasn't very good at that, it may be too late to market that book.
Right.
You know what I mean? So kind of figure out sort of early on. I recommend talk to people who you're considering hiring and see who you have chemistry with. I mean, it's not just about, you know, we're going to make you famous. I would never say that.
No, just
to be clear, it's not about the flash, right? Which, let's face it, we're all marketing companies. We all have to have pizzazz, right?
Yeah.
But you have to have chemistry with them, you know? So when you talk to people, make sure that you have chemistry with them, ask them the kinds of things that they do. Work with companies that give you options. Don't be locked into having to do everything just because that's all they sell, right? You want to make sure. So if you just want somebody to send out book reviews, great, right?
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think, like, certainly for me, I find social media really easy because there's no cold calling involved. But anything that would involve pitching a TV company or, you know, any kind of traditional media, I ain't doing that. So, you know, that's definitely out of my comfort zone because I don't like the phone. You know what I mean? It's like my introvert authorness likes the internet because you don't have to do that kind of stuff. So I think people should really think about that, like what suits their personality. One thing I did do want to just pick up on is, I don't believe that fiction authors need to blog. I think fiction can sell through other means, through, you know, content around fiction content, not necessarily blogging. So I mean, you know, I think you can sell much more on Amazon through the algorithms, through paid yeah. promotional opportunities. And talking about that, you have a little book, don't you, on how to sell truckloads on Amazon. So just talk about that for a minute. What's in that book?
Well, what I talk about is I talk about the fact that Amazon is its own search engine and it has a particular algorithm. And you can trigger that algorithm with keywords in your title or subtitle, keywords in your description, but also your categories, right? Mm. So here's something just to kind of leave your listeners with is that if you have, you know, like, for example, the book How to Sell Your Books by the Truckload is in a subcategory of business called direct marketing. Mm-hmm. When we first discovered that category, there were like 45 other titles in it.
Yeah.
Right. So it was hitting number one and number two and number three consistently. Mm-hmm. Right. What happens is when a book hits number one, regardless of the category, I mean, as long as it's the right category for your book, it triggers something in Amazon and they say, oh, looky, that book is selling well. We're going to add, you know, we're going to add some extra promotion to it. So it'll come up in lists. It'll come up in book recommendations. Mm. And there, so that's what this book is about. Essentially, it's ways to trigger that Amazon algorithm to get higher, to come up higher in search. Because Amazon will do all of that for free, by the way, if you can figure out how to work with their algorithms. And I actually ran this book by somebody who works for Amazon.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, yeah, that's absolutely right. How did you figure that out? And I said, well, you know, I have way too much time on my hands. But, you know, you just, you get on there and you experiment with it and you try something. And then, you know, and also raising and lowering the price of your book periodically. So drop your book to 99 cents and then put it up to $2.99 and then, you know, kind of. And I'll do that maybe a couple times a month where I'll just sort of drop. And it will bounce, it bounces in category, you know, it bounces within the category. So that's also very, very helpful. It just keeps the book active and it keeps it on Amazon's radar screen.
Brilliant.
But it's a short book. It's 30 pages and people love it, you know, because it's full of, there's no introduction. I figure nobody really wants my introduction. Here's how you sell a lot of books on the Amazon. And that's
it. There you go. Yeah. So where can people find the book, all your books and author marketing experts?
Yay! You can go to our website at amarketingexpert.com. And obviously my books are on Amazon and you can also get them on the website. And feel free to peruse the blog and the YouTube channel and all that good stuff. We, you know, we try to keep it very, very up to date. So
fantastic. So that was brilliant, Penny. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was just great.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.